Welcome to the State of CRM podcast. I'm Matt, and this week we actually have a special edition of the podcast. So recently we released a report called the State of CRM. It's an annual report that we do that focuses on measuring and understanding CRM marketing. So we want to understand what CRM marketers' challenges are, some of the opportunities they have, and shifts in strategy they've faced over the last year, and then we've used that information to make some predictions about the upcoming year. So lots of great insight within the study itself. Today, what I'm going to do is actually go through a webinar with you guys that highlights some of the key findings within the report. Definitely not exhaustive, so still encourage you to download and read the report itself. But great high-level insights here today. I'm not doing this alone. I have a special guest, Jorma. I'll let him introduce himself in a minute. But very, very excited to take everyone through some of the high-level findings from the State of CRM report.
All right. I think we can get started today. So first of all, I just wanted to thank everybody who's dialed in today. Really excited to present the findings from our latest State of CRM report. So the webinar that you'll be listening to today is actually reflective of just some of the insights that we've done from this research study. So this is our latest wave. It's a survey that went out to CRM marketers globally, and there's tons of different insights in the report. If you're dialed in today or you've registered for the webinar, you'll be receiving the report this week. I invite you to read it. There's a lot of insight within the report itself that we're actually not going to cover in the webinar today. I think we've got a lot of great insights, but it's definitely a bit more high level, and the report has a lot more insights as well as analysis that you can go through. So really excited to be presenting these findings for you. This is, again, our second wave of the study. So I think really interesting shifts and trends that we've seen from last year to this year's wave. If you have any questions, what I'll invite you to do is just type them into the chat feature at the bottom of your screen. We'll pause throughout the presentation to address any questions that emerge throughout. However, at the end of the presentation today, we'll make sure that we leave some time for questions as well. We're also going to be doing a couple very easy polls. Just want to keep people engaged and get people excited. So that will appear on your screen. All you need to do is select the answer that's most relevant for you. Very easy, nothing stressful today. We're going to keep it pretty light. So before we start, before we kick this off and introduce ourselves, we're going to do one really quick poll just to get ourselves warmed up a bit. So I wanted to ask folks essentially where they're dialing in from. If you could just select the market that you're dialing in from. Cool. It looks like we have a pretty wide variety of responses. So folks from France and the rest of EMEA, as well as the US and North America as well, and globally. So thanks everybody for joining in from around the world. Really excited to have you today listening in on the State of CRM webinar. So just to kick it off, you'll be hearing from a couple folks here today. I'll introduce myself and let Jorma introduce himself. I'm Matt Engstrom. I'm the product marketing director here at Tiny Clues. I sit in our New York office. I've been with the company a little bit over a year now, and I'm super excited to be presenting for the first time myself the State of CRM. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. Hello, my name is Jorma. I've been working at Tiny Clues for 5 years already as a customer success manager. I used to be CRM manager myself before. And so thanks everyone for attending, and I hope you will enjoy this webinar.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Jorma. Excited to be presenting with you today. Really quick, I'm not going to go over the agenda in too much detail, but I want to give you an idea of what you're in store for today. So I'm going to talk a little bit about methodology and the breakdown of the sample to give you an idea of who we actually spoke to in market. We're going to go over some major challenges that we identified through the data that are really relevant for 2022. Then we're going to take a look at best in class. So we kind of segmented out some CRM marketing programs that stood out based on some specific criteria to give us an idea of what great looks like within CRM marketing. We're going to talk campaign channel strategies, operations and campaign management, what customer centricity looks like according to CRM marketers, talk about measurement and tech, Then we're going to end on with conclusions and some predictions, as well as some time for questions at the end. So it should go pretty quick, but we have a lot of content to go through. So excited to get started. Overall, in terms of methodology, very straightforward. So we delivered an opt-in quantitative survey to CRM marketers globally, and we had a special incentive that was basically a donation for a not-for-profit, which I'm going to talk to you about in a couple slides, a really, really good program focused on the environment. So really good incentive to kind of help out the environment and the world that we live in. Sample size is about 99, so nearly 100 CRM marketers globally. Qualification criteria is obviously must work in CRM marketing and also must use email as a channel for campaign distribution. Markets, we had responses from around the world, but primarily EMEA and North America were our highest response markets. So a good representation of some of the advanced markets today. In terms of the sample itself, our goal was to try to get a pretty big variety in terms of sample, making sure that we had a good representation of company size, database size, as well as diverse CRM departments. So in terms of the size of the company, we see nearly half being between around 50 and 500 employees, over a third between 500 and 10,000. Just over 1 in 10 came from large companies of more than 10K, and the rest the companies between 10 and 50 and less than 10. In terms of CRM department size, we see the majority coming from departments of about 1 to 5 employees, but we also have respondents from larger departments of 6 and 10 and 11 plus employees as well. We also wanted to get a sense of database size, which helped us get additional analytics and additional breakdowns to help us analyze the data better. So we got a pretty good variety in terms of teams working with different sizes of CRM databases. So we have a pretty significant spike in database size between 1 million and 10 million, but a good variety of large databases between over 10 million and between 500K and 1 million and 100K and 500K as well. So really excited that we were able to get a diverse sample to analyze for you guys today. I mentioned the incentive earlier. Basically, for every response that we got, we planted a tree on behalf, or you working with the peer project to plant a tree on behalf of the respondent. So we're able to plant 99 trees, which is really exciting. We invite you to take a look at this not-for-profit company. They do great things environmentally and for sustainability worldwide. So thank you so much for those who responded to this survey. Not only did you help us get some great insights, but you did some good for the environment as well. Great. So I'm going to kick it over to Jorma to talk about CRM challenges.
Yes. Thank you, Matt. So as you were saying, all the answers allowed us to really detail the challenges for CRM teams in this questionnaire. So the main challenge remains for them increasing revenue. So it's pretty normal. We could expect that. What's interesting is also that improving customer lifetime value appears as really one of the top challenges. And it's interesting because it's, of course, it's close to increasing revenue, but it's on a long-term goal, not only short-term actions. Then creating personalized customer-centric experiences. We know it was present last year. It remains super important. That's definitely a challenge for the teams to have a customer-centric CRM. Then measuring performance is a top challenge, and it's normal because from all what we said before, the other challenges cannot be done or we cannot measure if it worked properly, if there is no way to analyze what's been done. So for 16% of the respondents, they even said that better analytics would be a game changer. And then last but not least, one of the top challenge, and again, it was also present last year, is the sourcing and integration of an effective tech stack. The tech stack, it's interesting because if we reverse the question to what's missing in the CRM industry, it's interesting to see what people have answered. So if we kick it to the next slide, we can see that when we ask what's missing, last year, one of the main answers was a clear advice and strategy. And this year, the top missing things for CRM are tech solutions that are easier to integrate, easier access to customer data, solutions that connect more easily to the stack. So basically a lot about tooling. So we could imagine that means that the vision of the strategies might be clearer for CRM teams where they want to go. But now what's missing on their point of view is the tools to deploy it and to make it work. So now that we know and we've defined the top challenges and what's missing for CRM teams, we wanted to see, okay, so those are the challenges. Maybe we could identify companies that are taking up those challenges, that really are more successful than the rest in applying what they want to do in the CRM strategy. So we wanted to find the best in class, and who are they? So how did we define those companies that we call the best in class? First, so of course, it's related to the challenges we've seen before. So first, they have to be revenue focused. So they make sure that revenue is one of the top metric for the CRM team, for the top management in the companies, on how the CRM is working. Not only engagement metrics, but really revenue metrics. A good understanding of customers. So ways to understand deeply their database and what's going on. Customer centricity. So yes, we, of course, best in class companies are the one which are succeeding, or at least feel they're succeeding in being customer centric. Advanced measurement, of course, and it's not only having some very basic KPIs, but also some more complex KPIs, or maybe some more different protocols like control groups or stuff like this, and an integrated tech stack. One of the way we have to identify what is an integrated tech stack is how easily a company can transfer in and out data to partners, because we can see that a flexible tech stack is super important when it comes to the CRM tools. So once we've done those criteria, who are the best in class companies? What we observed is that 40% of them are in the retail vertical, so which is the most represented among the best in class companies. And then you can see two typologies of companies. So companies between 50 and 500 employees, so small to medium sized companies, and 54% more likely to have more than 10K employees, so big companies. So those are the two typologies with the best in class CRM. So small and very flexible companies, and big, more mature, but with a strong tech stack, etc. company. So then what's interesting, and Matt will take that, is what's the difference between the best in class and the rest, finally.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jorma. So yeah, we're going to go into some individual or some specific categories of insight that we were able to get from the report. So I'm going to start with channel strategies. So we wanted to get an idea if marketers are, or how, which channels marketers are actually using to deploy campaigns, and how advanced they are in terms of like multi-channel versus single channel strategies. So before we get started looking at this data, I just want to draw your eye to the icons in the middle of the circles. So anywhere you see that metal with the star in it, that represents the best in class segment, or BIC. Anywhere where you see that globe, that represents the entire sample. So again, as Jorma had mentioned, we want to look at it best in class to get an idea of what some of the top CRM marketing teams are doing in terms of strategy, to give us an idea again of what great looks like. So what we basically asked is, here is, Are marketers deploying campaigns largely on a single channel, or are they using a multi-channel or omni-channel strategy? The difference between multi-channel and omni-channel is really multi-channel is the use of multiple channels for CRM marketing, but each channel tends to be somewhat siloed in terms of strategy. So measurement, optimization, all of those things tend to be channel by channel, as opposed to looking at the overall media mix in a concerted way. Where omnichannel tends to be really using a single strategy that's deployed across multiple channels. So unified measurement, potentially optimization, understanding frequency and pressure and exposure across different channels. So being the most sophisticated of the three, really, in terms of a 360 degree CRM strategy. So looking at the overall sample, we do see about 11% using one channel. However, I think that's really low, and we're actually seeing the majority of marketers deploying campaigns across multiple channels. And I think if we had looked at this data last year or 5 years ago, we'd probably see a significant number of single channel strategies, but that's being reduced as technology allows for a greater ability for marketers to be able to reach customers across the channel of their choice. Looking at the overall sample versus best in class, we see best in class being about 43% more likely to actually employ at that omni-channel strategy, that connected strategy across different channels. And we've seen quite a few barriers to entry for that strategy. There's tech limitations. You really need to be able to identify users and have that identity solution so that you can track and optimize across different channels, use measurement, et cetera. So omnichannel is a bit difficult to achieve still. However, because of those technology advancements, we're seeing more and more marketers leaning into that omnichannel approach. And I think throughout 2022, one of our major predictions is that omnichannel is going to continue to become a more important approach for marketers. And when looking at specific channels, again, I want to remind everybody had to be using email in order to participate in the survey, but we wanted to get an idea of which channels, if any, marketers are actually deploying campaigns across. So here are some of the top responses we see, really app push notification, web push notification, and most importantly, or most prominently rather, SMS or text message marketing, which is something that we're seeing used very frequently, but also being used with increased frequency. And when comparing the overall sample to best in class, we see best in class more likely to be deploying campaigns across each of these channels. So I think marketers are really leaning into this idea that, obviously, customers are interacting with different channels in a lot of different ways. What might work well for email in terms of reach might not necessarily work well for SMS. And so the best way to create that unified messaging experience for customers is really to make sure that you're messaging them where their attention is being placed. So really interesting to see this this sort of multi-channel strategy emerging more and more. Before we go into the next section, we have our second poll this morning. So really curious from the audience, and we'll find out from those that responded to the survey in a little bit, how long it takes you in general to complete an email campaign from sort of strategy to execution.
Yeah, we're super curious to have your answers.
Give you a minute, a couple seconds. Yeah, so we're kind of seeing a little bit of a wide variety here. I'm not gonna spoil the answer. It looks like a lot of people are still being very nimble in terms of email creation, doing it in less than a week or so. But we'll see what the overall sample said in a little bit. All right. So I'm going to talk a little bit about operations and campaign management. So this is really things like how long it takes for CRM marketing teams to actually execute an email campaign or a campaign in general, and how many campaigns are being sent out each week and things like that, just to get an idea of what best in class looks like versus the rest. And so here's our first piece of data. So here we asked, how long does it take to create a campaign? And this is essentially from decision to execute the campaign to full creation. And again, we have the full sample on the right and best in class on the left. So a couple of interesting things, even when looking at best in class, we're seeing that most respondents are actually being very flexible and sort of like very quick in terms of turnaround of campaigns. So 59% for the whole sample, and actually an increase when we look at best in class. So what we find from a lot of marketers is there's a lot of pressure to deliver campaigns very quickly. Business pressures emerge fairly last minute as it relates to prioritizing priority products, to pushing out a sales campaign, to using campaigns to move inventory, to promoting a partner. A lot of these different reasons for pushing out a campaign tend to come very quickly. And we as marketers don't always have the luxury of being able to plan months or weeks in advance. And I think that's what we're seeing here is this reaction to those commercial pressures, sort of creating a need for marketers to be able to be very nimble and flexible in terms of campaign creation. But we do see an increase, however slight, when we look at best in class, that they're more likely to actually be taking a little bit longer to create campaigns. And we were curious about what this actually meant. So we looked a little bit more deeply into the data and found that a lot of the big companies that were in the best in class segment fell into this more than 2 weeks category as it relates to how long it takes to create email campaigns. So we see a little bit of a spike in terms of less than a week and a little bit of a spike in terms of longer campaigns. And what we're seeing here is one, this is reflective of teams that are very quick, very nimble, and agile in terms of being able to get campaigns out very quickly, likely delivering on a lot of those business pressures pretty successfully. And then in that 28%, we're seeing teams that have a larger volume of campaigns that they're sending out. So they likely needed more planning and prep time to be able to deliver on that volume. So to be able to manage their campaign calendar successfully, they needed to basically be able to plan a little bit further ahead. So really interesting kind of dynamic that we're seeing there. But overall, we're seeing a pretty significant amount of marketers focused on creating campaigns very quickly. So the next section that we're going to be talking about, and one of my favorites, and I think one that's near and dear to a lot of marketers, is sort of this focus on customer centricity. And customer centricity really meaning creating relevant, interesting experiences for customers that they can lean into. So, you know, that could be relevant content, delivering things on the channels that customers want to receive them on, getting the right offers in front of them. So really, really thinking about marketing programs that focus on putting the customer first above and beyond anything else. And we didn't want to make any assumptions about what customer centricity actually meant for marketers. We wanted to let them tell us. So we asked, what makes you feel that your strategy is customer centric? What sort of things do you specifically associate as a marketer with customer centricity? And these are the top three responses that pop to the top. We see send many segmented campaigns, sending full-based campaigns with the content that is personalized, and just high conversion rates. So overall, nearly 9 in 10 of best in class and over 80% of the entire sample that we measured associate segmentation with customer centricity. Segmentation being identifying cohorts or groups of individuals that might be similar in terms of targeting, and targeting relevant messages to those different segments of individuals. And so we see segmentation is being tied very closely with a customer-centric approach to marketing. The second one is being potentially sending full-based campaigns or batch and blasting your entire database, but focusing more on content personalization. So making sure that whatever each individual or group of individuals, if you're focused on segments, is receiving from a campaign perspective, that the content is relevant. So it could be fields like, you know, potentially with specific products or things like that, that might be tailored to specific individuals. And then lastly, high conversion rates. So again, like best in class over indexed for each of these, but you know, this makes sense. This is a lower funnel metric that marketers are obviously very, very focused on. The higher conversion rates, the more likely it is that those campaigns were customer centric. And I think that's sort of the logic that marketers are using. But overall, we're seeing segmentation or creating campaigns that are relevant to groups of individuals as being highly associated with customer centric marketing. We also wanted to understand a little bit around how marketers are measuring pressure. And this is also very closely tied to customer centricity as well. So pressure is really very closely related to frequency, but it's very much thinking about like what is like sort of the optimal or the limit in terms of the number of campaigns or messages an individual is receiving. And this could be channel specific, but it could also be multi-channel kind of as, and that's important to think about as we know that marketers are deploying omni-channel strategies more and more. And essentially why pressure is important to look at is it's directly related to fatigue. And that fatigue is really is something that marketers need to keep an eye on when they're thinking about customer centricity specifically. So I think it depends on, you know, the campaign that you're deploying, the messaging you're using, the product that you're pushing, the channel, et cetera. But eventually at a certain number of messages, customers are going to start to fatigue. And basically what that means is they're going to be less engaged with your campaigns. They're likely going to be less likely to buy. They are going to be more likely to opt out. They're going to be more likely to unsubscribe from your database. And they're going to be less, their customer lifetime value is going to decrease over time. So fatigue is something that marketers are very focused on paying attention to because they want to make sure that they're keeping their customers as engaged as possible, their database healthy, and optimizing revenue from that perspective. So we wanted to get an idea of how marketers were really doing that. And so we asked them essentially how they're measuring pressure or how they're managing it. Really excited to see that even within like best in class and within the overall sample, less than 10% aren't looking at this. So marketers are, as they should be, very focused on measuring pressure and understanding how that impacts fatigue. Where the differences really lie when looking at the overall sample versus best in class is how they're measuring pressure. So about 51% or over half of all respondents are measuring it manually. So likely they have some sort of spreadsheet or calendaring system where they're actually taking a look at the upcoming campaigns, who's being reached by those campaigns, and ensuring that way that that individuals aren't receiving too many messages. Where we see best in class sort of emerging is really within having a specific tool to help them do that. So there's capabilities within market or within the marketplace, solutions that can provide insight into really like helping them be able to physically manage the number of messages individuals are receiving, making sure that the messages that individuals are receiving are actually relevant and that the ones that aren't relevant are going to somebody else, and also just sort of like managing that optimal frequency. So what we're seeing is best in class really leaning into solutions that can help provide additional insight, additional automation, and additional capabilities outside of that manual calendaring approach to managing fatigue. So we also wanted to find out our marketers sort of trying to understand the voice of their customer, and then what are they actually doing with that information? So we asked, are they using satisfaction surveys regarding their CRM? And are the insights on the second chart below that, are they translating into strategy? Are marketers actually using the insights that they get from understanding customer satisfaction, and are they using that and deploying them across their strategy? And so what we're seeing is both in those instances, not surprisingly, best in class company or marketing teams are more likely to do both. But when we look specifically, when we ask, do you have satisfaction surveys regarding your CRM? We see that looking at the overall sample, over half do. much higher for best in class, but we do see the majority of marketers using surveys to understand customer satisfaction. Where I think it gets really interesting in this particular instance is the second question. So when we asked, is strategies ever been changed or augmented based on that information, we're still seeing overall sample being about 39%. So less than 4 in 10 marketers actually saying that the insights they're getting is shifting their strategy. We're best in class, we're actually seeing about 60%, so much higher. So I think there's still some sort of gap or barrier between collecting that information and being able to use that information for strategic purposes. And that could be for a number of reasons. It could be simply bandwidth. It does take time to be able to run those insights, to understand what they mean, and to be able to actually say, hey, we're going to use these channels or use this type of communication or reach these specific customers with this specific offer, because, you know, it does take time to be able to do that. There are tools in place that can help ultimately help marketers be able to do that. So I think what we're probably seeing is a higher frequency, again, similar to the last slide, of best-in-class marketers deploying capabilities in tech solutions and whatnot in market to help them be able to translate the insights that they're getting into strategy. But really interesting stuff here. So now we're going to move on into measurement and tech. So Jorma is going to take you through this section.
Thank you, Matt. Great insights. It was really great about the pressure extra. So measurement in tech. So we've seen that it's a big challenge for all of the companies. So we wanted to dive a little bit into those questions. So what do we observe? First, an observation that could look pretty basic, but still very important, is that when asking companies if they use A/B testing to measure what they're doing, their actions, we can see that first, it's interesting that 73% of all the respondents said yes. So I think it's really a best practice, and most of the CRM teams are doing it. And obviously, when looking at the best in class, it's really a vast majority using A/B tests. So they are using most of the tools in the market, at least to send emails, have the ability to make some A/B tests and to have the answers based and to do some action based on that. And I think it's now widely used, and it's interesting to see. But this is just a glance. I think it's more detailed in terms of measurement in directly in the report, and I hope you'll enjoy that. Then if we look at the IT part, so the tech stack, we've seen it's what's missing most for a lot of the CRM teams. What do we observe? We observe that CRM teams need their IT to help them integrate some new tools, integrate data, have access to the analytics. So it's a lot of collaboration. And the question was to know how the CRM teams and the IT teams are working together. And what's interesting to see is that for the best in class companies, most of them are working with a ticketing solution that provide them the possibility to send tickets to IT. So not necessarily a dedicated IT squad, but a very reactive IT able to answer those tickets. And it sounds like what we've seen before with the two typologies of companies. And that sounds like a big company process, right? But it's a big company process that's working right, and that can definitely deliver. Then we see that some other kinds of way to work, some companies have a dedicated IT squad. And for some companies, and even more for the majority of the respondents, the marketing team sometimes has autonomy when it comes to some of the tech they employ, but it's also can be a limitation as they might not be as skilled as the IT teams could be to connect the tools. And then when we go a little bit deeper in this stack. So once we know how they collaborate to make it work, if we try and see what tools are the CRM teams using and how equipped they are, what we can see is that definitely best-in-class companies are more equipped than the rest of the respondents for all the different tools like CDP, DMP for push-up notifications, ability to send push, recommendation engines. So, and sometimes there is a huge gap as for recommendation engines. Also, what's very interesting to see is that CDP, the market is talking about that a lot, and it's already pretty equipped. So again, it's more detailed in the report, but we can see that 73% of the best in class already are equipped. So it can be sometime built directly internally by the company, sometimes can be bought, but it's already becoming pretty standard tool for CRM to use. So now we can see what our conclusions and recommendations are based on all those questionnaires and all those answers. So first, we've tried to identify some keys to CRM success. The first one is that, so we've been talking a lot about customer centricity, and what we really can observe is that customer centricity is many things, in fact. So is many things because it can be what Matt was describing, can be a multi-channel strategy. It can be, so it's a way to communicate to your customers on different devices and different moments, but it can also be personalized content, and it can be both together or not necessarily. So there are many ways to become more and more customer centric. It's also being able to keep an eye on pressure and let your customers set the preferences. So this also are ways to be more customer centric. So again, it's many things. And last but not least, it's letting your customers have influence on your strategy. So be able to listen to what they're telling you and be able to change your strategy based on those feedbacks. Then second key to the success is, and we've said that before, but it's being able to test, to measure, and to repeat what's working. Of course, it's CRM is definitely digital marketing, and there are many tools to do it. So it's a chance to be able to do some actions to test and to keep what's working. So it has to stay in the DNA of every CRM team and to keep doing that. Another key we've identified to CRM success is the alignment of the stakeholders on long-term strategy. Of course, it's easy to measure CRM actions campaign per campaign, to measure on the last click the revenue of every campaign every week, every month, and it's definitely interesting. It's a KPI that everybody's following, but CRM being finally about the database, so about people, it's important to have a long-term strategy because you want people to stay with your brand. You want them to engage it for a long time. And in that sense, your KPIs, your strategy also have to be a long-term strategy. Also have to not only be about the next campaign on the next Friday, but also about what my database will look like in a year from now, in 2 years from now. So it's super important that everybody's aligned on those objectives. And the last key to CRM success is we've observed that a lot of companies are looking for this fully integrated CRM tech stack. And from what we've seen and from what we know, it still doesn't exist. Maybe some day it will exist, but at the moment it doesn't exist. So CRM people have to rely on their IT to connect different tools together to make things work together, the data, and in that case, they have to be flexible to have the ability and have the IT team to support them to really be able to operate their CRM the best possible way. So I think those four keys are really interesting for every CRM team. And now, so that's the state of CRM as we saw it based on those response. Now, if we should predict what the future of CRM could be, first point is the future, but it's in fact already the present, is that data privacy is the issue on data privacy is rising, and it's going to, the trend is totally going to continue like this. We saw that with iOS 15, we saw that with the GDPR, it's been some years now, but it's here and it's going to be stronger and stronger. So CRM teams should be extremely careful on that matter. COVID has changed behavior. It's true maybe for customers, but it's also true for companies, because sometimes it was a way for the rest of the company, not the CRM, to understand that when the shops were closed, one way to keep the contact with the customers was a database. So it's also another way to see CRM even internally. Hyper-focus on personalization, it's a top challenge. Everybody wants to be as personalized as one-to-one CRM as possible. And of course, it will remain. It's where everyone wants their CRM to be. It will also be helped by targeted and omnichannel strategy. As Matt was saying, now the tools which are able to support those strategy exist, are present, and more present, and more available. So it will allow marketers to really have some omnichannel strategies. And last but not least, and it's all related, measurement will become even more important. You and all the companies will want to know if they make return on their investment, if the strategy is working. So it is and it will remain very important to have the best tools to measure. So I think that's what we can predict. I don't know, Matt, if you have some things to add about the future of CRM, your point of view on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jerome, those predictions were really spot on. I think, you know, the only thing that to add is really that I think the future of CRM is really bright. I've been at TinyClues, like I'd mentioned at the beginning, a little bit over a year now. And even seeing sort of like, I was largely on the advertising side before, and seeing the shifts that have happened even in the last year within CRM have been really interesting. And I think, like, as you know, for example, you talk about privacy, as the regulations around data usage and the ability for marketers to be able to use advertising for acquisition, those costs are just going to go up. And so, and the use of third-party data is becoming more and more difficult. And so the, you know, zero party and first party data, the data sets that largely CRM marketers have to work with are really going to become essential, not just for marketing, but for business decisions as well. And so I think, like, being within CRM is a really exciting place to be. Technology is fundamentally changing so quickly to allow, you know, marketers to be able to do more things, to create those omni-channel strategies, to be able to measure effectively, and to be able to use AI for optimization. So I think, like, really, really exciting stuff in CRM. It's been, you know, a fun ride for me, and I'm excited to kind of see what 2022 brings. And I think with that, I think that's all we have today in terms of content. I want to remind everybody that you will be receiving a hard copy, or a digital copy rather, of the report in your inbox. It's much more detailed, covers all of what we covered today and a lot more. I also want to say, if you haven't had a chance to, we have Some of you may recognize me, most of you probably don't, but we have a State of CRM podcast every single week where we talk a lot about the topics that we went through on this report today, and a lot more in detail. And some of the themes that we've been discussing, we go into in a lot more detail on that weekly podcast. So I invite everyone to listen. If you're looking for a way to be able to access it, just reach out. I'm happy to be able to send that to you. And with that, I think what I'd like to do is just close it out with some questions. So again, if you've had any burning questions throughout, feel free to put them into the chat. If you don't get it to it today, feel free to reach out to us and we'd be happy to have a conversation with you or answer that either via email or LinkedIn. So let's see what we have in terms of questions.
So we have one first question. So the question is, do you find there is an optimal frequency when thinking about fatigue management?
Interesting. So, Jerome, if you have any additional thoughts on this, feel free to chime in. But I think like we do get that question a lot. And I think that is something that marketers are really seeking to be able to answer. And unfortunately, from my perspective, I think the answer is, I don't think there is. I don't think you can really average out and say like, two messages delivered via email, one via push, and three app notifications is exactly what is going to take to get the most number of people to convert, because everybody's experience in terms of consuming media is different. The channel order, where they're really focused, et cetera. What resonates with people is different. The products that you're pushing might be interesting for some people, but not interesting for other folks. So I think like it really is thinking about personalization and leaning into what each individual customer wants and what is right for them, rather than sort of using one straight metric to say this is what we need to optimize towards. Because the reality of it is even if you say the best optimal average frequency is three, and you can get data to tell you that, most people are going to fall outside of that. It might be four, it might be two. So I think it's understanding really what works for each consumer, getting relevant content in front of them, which is the number one thing you need to do to get closer to your customer. And then I think like, you know, frequency, when you're doing that right, when you're creating customer relevancy, the importance of frequency goes down quite a bit. And I think it's maybe, you know, and this might be somewhat controversial, but not necessarily the metric marketer should be focused on optimizing towards when thinking about customer centricity.
I totally agree. It's a great answer. It's a question we have very frequently, and I totally agree. There is not a magic number of frequency. It really depends on all your CRM program, as Matt was describing. Absolutely agree.
Cool.
So we have two other questions. First question is, can push notifications replace email in the future? Well, I can take this one. In fact, what one important point and that all our customers are seeing is that the mobile first exists now. So yes, people are checking their emails on their mobiles and of course their push notifications on their mobile. Then the question about push notifications is that you cannot, will it replace email? No, I don't think so. It's a little bit like when we see that it's going to disappear. It's been years since everybody is predicting that email is going to disappear, but it's not, and it's even stronger than before, due to COVID also, or thanks to COVID. I don't know how you want to phrase that, but so no, I don't think so. I think it's totally complementary. You cannot say the same. Maybe you're going to use email more for branding, for different ways, and push for its different moments, its different way to use it, but will it replace it? Not necessarily. We can see that some business have become push first, but it doesn't mean that they've stopped sending email at all. So, yeah.
Cool.
Then we have another question about recommendations to avoid consequences of Apple's mail privacy protection. to avoid consequences, one clear consequence of the Apple's mail privacy protection is that the open logs, open information, will not be a good metric in the future. That's for sure. So that's a consequence, and there are some ways right now to maybe avoid this consequence, is to isolate people using Apple devices, to have, at least for the rest, some open rates that looks like the real ones. But I think one action is more to change a little bit the KPIs and to start thinking that the open rate will not be a CRM KPI anymore in the future, and that other engagement KPI should be invented. Of course, click remain relevant, but sometimes people put some feedback block on their emails. I think no real way to avoid consequences, but just to adapt to how the future will be like.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Jorman. I think, again, just to plug the podcast, we have a lot of sessions that are really focused on sort of this focus on privacy and sort of what marketers should be thinking about. And, you know, you hit it right on the head when thinking about other metrics. And I think what marketers also need to be thinking about is there is a high level goal that we hear over and over again from CRM teams about aligning CRM KPIs with business KPIs. So things that are focused more on margin, more on revenue, more on customer lifetime value. So I think it's not always easy, but it is very possible, especially now, to be able to start thinking about optimizing your CRM campaigns towards those business level metrics and focusing less on proxy metrics such as open rate. I think it's an opportunity actually for marketers to start thinking about driving those business metrics rather than focusing on that. So I think in the short term it's a little bit scary, but I think in the long term there's a big opportunity for us as marketers to start rethinking about, you know, really what we're driving in terms of value for the business and how we can prove that out.
Totally. Do you measure the impact of iOS 15 on the open rate? Yes, absolutely. It depends on the company, but for some companies, we've seen some like numbers and some increase in the open rates that are proving, again, well, we knew it was going to happen, but it happened faster than expected and sometimes stronger than expected, with very high increase in open rates, because some bots were just opening it looks like everybody opened the email. So that's why. So yes. It's the impact is already very, very present.
Cool. Looks like we have one as well about the makeup of the sample within best in class. So do you mix up company sectors and size within best of class? And the answer is yes. So when we set those defining criteria that Jorma went through earlier in the presentation, we actually saw there to be a mix of teams. We did see there being a higher likelihood that larger companies would fall within best in class, but we did see teams sort of falling from each of those different buckets that we went through at the beginning when we looked at the sample. So it is somewhat diverse and not just representational of big companies with tons of resources to deploy.
Amelie, back to the question of any idea of the increased 10%. So again, it depends on your share of Apple users. And that depends from what we see for our customers. That depends a lot on your vertical, the kind of product you're selling. But if 30 or 40% of the users are using Apple devices, and that 100% of them are opening every of your email, even if they are not, but Apple tells you that they are opening all of their emails, that can grow a lot, the open rate.
Cool.
So more than 10%, maybe. Much more.
Cool. All right. Any great questions, and thank you so much for asking them. Any other questions before we end today? Great. Looks like we've got them all answered. Again, if anything comes to mind, you want to have a conversation about any of the things that we've talked about, feel free to reach out. Otherwise, you should be receiving a copy of the report very, very soon. Would love to hear any feedback on it. You know, we're definitely going to be doing more waves of this in the future, so it will just help us make the report even more useful for you going forward. So thanks everybody so much for joining. I know there's a lot of webinars out there these days, and I really, really appreciate your time and also your engagement here today. So have a great rest of your week.
Well, that's all we have today in terms of the state of CRM. I hope you enjoyed what we went through. Lots of great insight. I want to thank Jorma for joining me today on the podcast. Once again, if you're interested in getting your hands on a hard copy of the report, by all means, just reach out to me, or you can reach out to Ben as well. I know he didn't join us this week, but he's been doing a lot of distribution of the report itself. Lots more within the actual digital copy of the report. So if there's interesting things you want to learn more about, by all means, give it a read through. If you have any questions about anything that we went through, feel free to reach out to me directly. I'd be happy to either have a conversation with you or answer your question via email or on LinkedIn as well. So as always, thank you so much for joining, and we will see you next week.